This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Let's talk some wrestling. How about it? This is Chris Graham here on Street Knowledge, and I've been wanting to do this for a couple of days. Let things germinate a bit, though. You know, we had another pay-per-view event on Sunday night, Battleground, and we'll talk about that here on the podcast. We'll talk about SummerSlam coming up in August. Already seeing some matches developing for SummerSlam as we're heading into SummerSlam season, the big show of the summer, the midpoint of the year from the WWE calendar standpoint. And we're going to talk a little bit about the progress of the former NXT stars, at least the most recent couple of years NXT stars in the SmackDown and Raw divisions. And then we'll talk at the end of this podcast about some Jason Jordan news. We'll talk about that too. So let's get first to the review of Battleground. And we'll start at the end of the show, the Punjabi prison match. And controversial though it was, only controversial in the sense that, boy, everything that could have gone wrong with this match did. It wasn't the comedy of errors that Bray Wyatt-Randy Orton match from a couple of months ago was. But the premise of this still was off. They kept talking in the walk-up to this that there's, wow, it's the first Punjabi prison match in a decade. And I think we saw why. The structure itself was almost impenetrable, not for, you know, obviously for the heel faction of Jinder Mahal and his stooges, the Bollywood boys, I guess, well, the Singh brothers, I guess, call them now. But from the standpoint of trying to watch it, I'm sure for the live crowd, they couldn't see anything. TV was kind of hard. The structure was basically two steel cages, one right on top of the ring, and then one a few feet outside, and painted to look like they were bamboo steel reinforced. It was all just a steel cage, but really hard to see through that structure, even with those TV cameras trying to get angles to, you know, see through the the two parts of steel that you had to look through. Then the premise of the match itself, boy, you know, there were four doors out, and you could request out, but the door would only stay open for 60 seconds, and if you didn't get out then, that door was closed, and blah, 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 blah. You know, you get to the end, the slow, treacherous end to this match, and after all that stuff about the doors and all this, Randy Orton is left left for dead, if you want to say, in the middle of the ring, as the Singh brothers helped Jinder Mahal get out of the cage, the first cage, I should say, and then he's climbing to get out, and Orton is stuck in the ring, and boy, he just climbed the first cage and jumped to the second cage. Well, if it was that easy, what's the whole point about the doors, right? We get great Khali then interfering at the end to help Jinder Mahal get the win. And I have no problem with outside interference deciding things and that kind of thing. I mean, sometimes you can advance a storyline that way. That's great. Randy Orton as a top star right now. I know he's had some time off. He's been back for a while now. I'm not into him anymore. I've not been for a while. Certainly not as a babyface. It's probably hard to make him a heel because you cheer the RKO and, you know, that kind of thing. But I think I'd rather cheer for him as a heel than cheer for him as a babyface. He's not very compelling as a babyface. And we've seen that his feuds with Bray Wyatt and now with Jinder Mahal falling flat, by a long shot. And, I like Jinder Mahal as a champion now. Dave Meltzer's reporting that, you know, the talk behind the scenes is that that Mahal's either going to drop the belt around SummerSlam or the following pay-per-view in September. I guess that's par for the course for WWE creative. Build somebody up and then knock them back down to the ground. I actually like this title reign. He's proven to be one of those great classic, as we call him in wrestling, chicken shit heels. He's hiding behind his stooges. He's now hiding behind the great Khali. I mean, to me, there's the development potentially of a faction that could be really interesting, you know, reminiscent of, and I don't want to compare them to, but reminiscent of how the Four Horsemen interacted back in the 80s. Everybody's goal was to protect Ric Flair and make sure he maintained that NWA World Championship. And you really ended up hating those guys, all of them, and you hated Flair even more because, you know, he didn't win matches. He just cheated to win and, you know, that kind of thing. And the way it played out was great. It really worked from a psychology standpoint. As fans, you couldn't wait to see the next time a top babyface would emerge to challenge Ric Flair. And it made every match with Flair was so hot. Every contender that emerged was super hot because Flair was impenetrable. In a different way, though, than sometimes you see a champion, you just knew that there was going to be something to keep that belt on him. And I see the potential, if WWE would see this, the potential for Jinder Mahal to do the same thing. They take the belt away, that takes that away. I mean, you know, at this stage, I don't know that he's had the belt long enough to get the rub he needs from it. And I don't know what putting the belt on someone else, at this stage, looks like Baron Corbin would probably be that guy. He's got the Money in the Bank briefcase. You know, it's logical that, you know, whoever Mahal wrestles at SummerSlam and or the following pay-per-view, don't know the name, don't care, in September for the SmackDown brand, that he would win that match and then Baron Corbin would emerge and cash in his briefcase and win the belt. I'm not sold on Baron Corbin in the first place, so I'm biased in against that forthcoming reign, I suppose. Certainly don't think it would benefit the long-term trajectory of Jinder Mahal, who I think has potential to be a long-time heel. And again, with that development, with his Singh brothers as stooges, with the great Khali in a limited role, and limited role for good reason. The guy can't move very good. When he does move, he doesn't move very predictably. He's not a great worker, but he's got size, and he can be an enforcer-type guy, and he plays that role greatly. I'd love to see that faction build up around Mahal and maybe give the Singh brothers a chance at some tag team success. Again, have Khali play that enforcer role. And see a group get together and stay for a while, kind of like the New Day. When the New Day formed a couple of years ago, you know, that was bringing three guys together who were sort of floundering on their own. And boy, that took off in a way that was unpredictable because they started off as heels. They've been faces for a long time now. I think that a faction building around Jinder Mahal could really have legs on the SmackDown brand. It could be really interesting. If it's played right, and I hope that they continue. Actually, I hope whatever Dave Meltzer's inside knowledge, inside information is, hope is wrong. I'd like to see that Mahal and a group arising around him, be given more opportunity to run with the ball, because I think that they're doing a good job with it. That said, though, Punjabi Prison match, not where we needed to be. Wild ending at Battleground to weird ending, I should say, to the AJ Styles Kevin Owens match. Makes you think. I mean, boy, when it first happened, you know, that quick pinfall that led to the championship changing hands, Owens walking away with the belt. When it first happened, I thought that doesn't seem like it was supposed to happen. It looked like maybe that was a quick count. Maybe, you know, that was kind of a botch by the referee. Then you see Styles hanging around the ring for a while afterwards. The only thing that threw me off was that the graphic flashed up on the screen really quickly, proclaiming Kevin Owens to be the U.S. champion. It made me think that graphic had been worked out ahead of time and was part of the plan. But Dave Meltzer reporting that Styles was actually scheduled to win the match day of the show, and then something changed. And of course, we know that because we saw it, right? So Meltzer often gets his words get dumbed down a bit when they're repeated in translation. But yeah, obviously the plan changed because things changed that night. And so the speculation then is, you know, Styles stayed in a ring for a while afterwards. He threw a fit. He for the live crowd, not for us when watching on TV. We were moved on to the next graphics package, TV package, setting up the next match. But apparently in the live audience, Styles actually seemed to be upset at the ending of that match. I wonder, of course, it wasn't done for TV purposes, so maybe I'm wondering too much here, but I just wonder if it was a sales job to get those live fans talking a little bit. I don't know. Sometimes I overread that. Especially again because it's not being played on TV. I'm recording this podcast before SmackDown airing on Tuesday. So maybe we'll see if the writers develop that anymore, or if it's just a matter of, hey, we wanted to take the belt off Styles because we're moving him to another match and to another dance partner. And that would be good. I like the rapport between Styles excuse me, and Kevin Owens. But, Styles probably has some bigger fish to fry. He did his part to help elevate the U.S. Championship. When you bring a guy like AJ Styles from a long world title run, you make him chase the U.S. Championship like he did there for a while and actually add some prestige to that U.S. belt. Of course, Kevin Owens having the belt too. Former Universal Champion, had that belt for a long time. Both those guys fighting for that belt gives it some credence, but it's probably time. I mean, the dreams among us, I guess, talking about SummerSlam as we're going to do on this a little bit too. Wouldn't we love to see AJ and Shinsuke, right, on SummerSlam? Shinsuke Nakamura in another odd match on Battleground wins by disqualification over Baron Corbin, the aforementioned, who has the Money in the Bank briefcase. And Corbin with a low blow ending that match. So just an odd ending. I mean, so many wrestling matches involve so much in terms of dastardly cheating tactics by the heel, and we see a simple low blow in a match here. That's, I know why they did it. It makes it so that neither guy has to suffer a pinfall loss to the other. They're both guys who are hot. This keeps them both hot. A pinfall loss obviously cools one guy off. But why even have the match in the first place? It seemed like a contrived feud in the beginning. Gives them something to do, I suppose. But yeah, that whole storyline, the way that match played out, just not good. The best match of the show, in my opinion, was the first match. The Usos and the New Day, too. Boy, I think we're going to look back in a few years and say classic tag teams, reminiscent of the British Bulldogs and the Hart Foundation. The Rock and Roll Express, I mean, these two teams, the Usos and the New Day, are on that level. And putting them together in the ring, boy, that was magical. I mean, that was a great match and really a hot match to start the show off with. I remember thinking when I sat down to watch the show on Sunday night, 8 o'clock Eastern time, I'm also a Big Brother reality TV show fan. And my thought was, okay, I'll peek at the WWE show. And probably watching Big Brother that first hour because the matches I really care about are going to come up later on. And I got sucked into that Usos New Day match, and I got Big Brother on the DVR. So we'll have to watch that at some point. But that match did a great job all the way around. And, I hope that feud is not over. And I can't imagine that it is. The Usos as a heel tag team. Boy, I'd really was bored by them as faces. They had that long run as baby faces. I'm not impressed with what they did as faces. As heels, they're classic. And it's great to see them in their element. So that was a great match on Battleground. Now, the only highlight, in my opinion, from last night's Raw was the announcement that we knew was coming, that the match for the Universal title currently held by Brock Lesnar will be a four-way match involving also Braun Strowman, Roman Reigns, and Samoa Joe. And, we knew that was coming. A couple weeks ago, Kurt Angle proclaimed a match between Roman Reigns and Samoa Joe to determine the number one contender. Braun Strowman intervenes, and then this week we get the announcement. It was, I think it could have been played out a little better. I would have liked to have seen perhaps instead of just going straight from Strowman interfering in the Joe versus Reigns match, I would like to have seen last night perhaps a triple threat match that would have ended in some controversial way or without an ending, maybe, if you could say it that way. Maybe even have Lesnar come in and interfere, whatever the case may be, just to add to the intrigue. It felt a little forced last night. I would like to have seen maybe another week or two to set this match up. Instead, WWE just goes straight to it. Says we got posters to put out, I guess we need to get those ready and hang those up in Buffalo Wild Wings across the country. So now they've gone ahead and announced the match. And good for them, and we knew it was coming, and it should be a great match. In a way also, I mean, potentially for Brock Lesnar to drop the belt without getting pinned, which is just like at WrestleMania a couple of years ago. if you can take the belt off the heel, the monster, and do so without the monster having to suffer the pinfall loss, that's pretty good booking. And so I think that's what's going to end up happening. I don't know who among the three will get the belt. Strowman would be intriguing, I have to say, just from the top. He'd be another monster. He also, but unlike Brock Lesnar, who wrestles slash works a few days a year on WWE TV, you have Braun Strowman out there every week. It'd be interesting to see, you know, put the belt on Strowman. You know, I don't know that Joe makes a logical choice right now, makes a logical guy, but he put the belt on Strowman and then let Roman Reigns chase him for a while, because I think, you know, we could probably foresee a Roman Reigns Brock Lesnar match at WrestleMania next year as one of the co-main events, at least. But having Reigns chase Strowman around for a while, maybe all the way up, you know, Survivor Series, maybe even Royal Rumble, and then finally win the belt. That could be a good storyline if WWE would be patient enough to play that out. And it's just nice for Joe. I'll kind of transition now, talking about those former NXT stars and how they're doing. I was thinking about this last night watching the Raw show, about how these just the last three NXT champions, not including Bobby Roode, because of course he's still the current champion. You go back to Joe. He's been main eventing lately. Put a pretty solid match on with Brock Lesnar at the last Raw pay-per-view. Again, I don't care about the names. Great Balls of Fire, I guess it was. But if it's not SummerSlam, Survivor Series, Royal Rumble, or WrestleMania, it's just a name, to me at least. But Joe put on a great match with Lesnar, and he's actually the match he had with Reigns before Strowman interfered was solid. I thought the whole psychology with him and Lesnar leading up to their match, Great Balls of Fire, was pretty solid. So Joe has definitely he's in the main event slot, and he's been showing that he deserves it. Finn Balor, of course, was the first Universal Champion. Reign cut short after only one day because the injury he suffered during the match when he won it against Seth Rollins in that final sloppy Seth Rollins in that one, cutting Balor's reign short. But now he's kind of stuck in a low card feud with Elias Samson. But then again, that's helping elevate Samson, even with Balor getting the wins for the most part in these matches. You know, they're using Balor to elevate someone else, which is nice. And of course, Nakamura over on SmackDown is a guy that we just know is destined to some big slot, if not at SummerSlam, certainly at WrestleMania coming up next year. But then you look down, you know, I mentioned Elias Samson. He's been getting interesting face time on Raw lately for a guy that never really got out of the low card on NXT. You know, a guy that was a gimmick guy who really only won squash matches there, you know, at least on TV. I can't think of anybody he beat of significance during his NXT run. At least, you know, he won some squash matches. He developed his character, and then all of a sudden he's on the main card, and he's now feuding with Finn Balor. It's you know, nice push for him. Ty Dillinger's kind of getting forgotten. You know, I'm glad he's on the main roster. I've been saying for a long time he deserved the spot. He's so over with the fans. He's on the kickoff show for SmackDown pay-per-views. You know, I can't say too much about creative because they did finally bring him up to the main roster, but they still don't know how to use the guy. The guy's over. Every time a referee counts, now, at least on WWE TV programming, live WWE crowds, every time a referee counts, start counting to 10 for guys who are counted, you know, maybe for countouts or two guys down in the middle of the ring, the crowd chants 10, 10, 10, 10. That's Ty Dillinger, folks. He's over. That's over, like beyond over. But he's still being buried, so I don't know what to make of that. Baron Corbin, another guy who didn't get, in my opinion, he certainly wasn't Ty Dillinger or Elias Samson, who both in NXT were buried on the bottom of the card. Corbin was never the champion in NXT, but he did, towards the end of his run there, inject himself into the title picture. I remember there was a match, I want to say it was Joe and Sami Zayn and Corbin, and they had a triple threat for a number one contendership, I think maybe to get ready to challenge Finn Balor for the belt back when that was going on a couple years ago. And Corbin, you know, at least he was there, and then he won that Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal and just never left the main roster. And now he's got the Money in the Bank briefcase, which indicates that he's going to be a champion for at least a day or two. He's going to cash that briefcase in and win a belt, and how long he keeps it from there is going to be, you know, be a question mark. But he's a guy that actually, you know, he's kind of showing. He's a big guy. He's listed at 6'8", 275. He's athletic, former football player, a couple cups of coffee with NFL practice squads, and he's a guy that you know, he's got a look. He's got that sort of biker look, you know, that long stringy hair. He's tall and lean but big. You know, 6'8", 275 is nothing to sneeze at. But he's you know, he's got a good look, and he can work well, and he's a big guy. Vince likes big guys. So Corbin's got a future, no question about it. And you know, Sami Zayn, poor Sami. Sami, another former NXT champion. He's on the main roster. He's sort of the guy, though. I mean, you know, at least some guys are positioned towards the back end of the card, as you know, kind of thinking of Dolph Ziggler here. Guys that you beat that guy on your way to a title match. Right now, Sami Zayn's a guy that you beat. I don't even know. Well, he's just on your way to the opening match, I suppose. Poor Sami is just, you know, he got the win over Mike Kanellis at the Battleground pay-per-view the other night, but wins on TV few and far between for Sami. And it brings me to the Bobby Roode, Drew McIntyre. I think that's coming up. I think I have this right. That's coming up for the next NXT TakeOver. And, you know, I'm kind of looking at that saying, you know, right now, and the patience of developing these guys. I mean, obviously, neither one of these guys are developmental guys. Bobby Roode, you know, multi-time champion in TNA now. What is that? It's now GFW, Impact Wrestling. But Roode held every major belt there numerous times, and he's a proven commodity. And Drew McIntyre, actually, too. I mean, he got stuck in that 3MB with Jinder Mahal for a while, but he's a talented guy, and he was also a you know, top guy in TNA for his time there. I'm looking at that and saying, if I'm one of those two guys, I kind of want to hang around NXT for a while. You know, obviously, you know, you want to, if you're going to make the move, you want to make it before WrestleMania season, certainly, you know, well in advance of WrestleMania season, so you can have a developed storyline. But I don't know. I enjoy NXT programming as much, if not more, than the main programming each week. And so they need guys there too, and they've got a stable of them. But at the top, Roode and McIntyre, I kind of hope that goes on for a while. I think that could be pretty interesting. So it brings us to the last topic of our podcast here. Jason Jordan, this maniacally stupid storyline. I mean, on the one hand, I love seeing Jason Jordan and Chad Gable split up as a tag team. I mean, they're both very talented wrestlers, and I think they both have great futures together. And a split needed to be made. Their tag team needed to be broken up. And the best way to do it would be to put them on different programs. So moving Jason Jordan over to Raw, great. He's a, you know, Gable is a smaller guy who will fit in well as a singles guy on SmackDown. Jordan's just a classic big guy. I mean, he's got the pedigree from amateur wrestling, no question about that. But he's also got size that you just don't teach to people. You know, using the Enzo Amore line, I suppose, you don't teach that size. You don't teach that look, and he's got the look. But the Kurt Angle storyline, this thing is just it's insulting to the intelligence, and it's been a while. Have to say, gotta give him credit. It's been a while since WWE has made me feel like they're trying to insult my intelligence. Been a while. I mean, you know, they used to do it regularly back in the 80s and 90s, all those cartoon characters. A good friend of mine and I who are big wrestling fans, Brian might be listening to this podcast right now, we always called WWF at the time, now WWE, we called it the circus. That's pretty much what the programming there was for a long, long period of time. And it hasn't been a circus for a long time. You know, when they went to the Attitude Era and developed edgy, hardcore characters, you know, they got away from this, for the most part, got away from the circus motif. You know, like watching last night, it's so forced. Jason Jordan in these personal interviews talking about how great it is that he learned at Kurt Angle's, his real-life father, and blah, blah, blah. It's just dumb. It's just stupid. I mean, yeah, okay, it's a storyline. I get it. It means that he's going to get a push because, you know, the son of the GM is going to get a push, and you know how that plays out. I mean, at some point, right now they're playing it as he's a babyface, but you just know that inevitably it's going to turn him heel because people are going to be upset about the push he's getting. We even saw last night Emma hinted to that. Emma comes out, says she wants a match, she wants more of a push before getting squared up with Nia Jax and what turned into a squash match for Nia Jax. Emma says, I know how to get your attention. I'll start dating your son. So I can see where that's going, but Jason Jordan is too good. He's too good to have to play this dumbass role. It's just all you can call it. It's a dumbass storyline. And honestly, Kurt Angle doesn't need it either. You know, I don't know, like, you know, all that whispering and everything else that Corey Graves was doing for weeks, he and Corey talking, you know, sometimes awkwardly, purposefully awkwardly during broadcast. I don't know if this was the story all along or if they had a different one and this got thrown in at the end because the original story got messed up somehow, like a guy didn't sign or somebody got hurt or Vince had a change of heart, whatever the case may be. But this was just a terrible – if this is a fallback, it's a terrible fallback. If this was the plan all along, fire those who said this should be the plan all along. This is just dumb, especially for, again, a guy that – I mean, it's not going to be long, I don't think. If Jason Jordan plays his cards right, if WWE plays their cards right with Jason Jordan, and he can avoid the injury bug, et cetera, et cetera. I look at this guy as a guy who can be one of the building blocks of your company for a long time. He's an amateur wrestler with a look. He's a big guy. Not only is he photogenic, he's telegenic. He talks well on the mic. If this, you know, maybe, you know, long term, maybe this gets him over, et cetera, et cetera. But, man, it bugs me right now to see this just maniacally dumb storyline playing out. It makes me change the channel. And if you make me change the channel, maybe I don't come back. Especially right now, hey. You know, the Nats were off last night. I'm a baseball fan, so the Nats were off. I didn't have anything to change to. When the Nats are playing on a Monday night, you get me to change the channel. I get into the Nats game. When football season starts, tell you what, you get me to change the channel over to Monday Night Football, you might lose me there too. And then there's still baseball for a while. So, you know, anything like this that gets people to roll their eyes and change the channel is not good. And that's what these segments are right now. So this has been fun. Talking wrestling as we get to do here on our podcast on a regular basis, and look forward to doing more. Again, the SmackDown, we recorded this before the SmackDown show tonight. There might be some changes as a result. Feel free to comment both on this story, either on Facebook, tweet me, of course, just on the website. You can go on to our Discuss commenting platform. You can email me. My email address is all over the Augusta Free Press website. Love to get your feedback. Take your questions. We do occasionally do live Q&As through Facebook, and we'll be doing one of those again coming up soon. Got to advertise it first, get you knowledgeable about the fact we're going to be doing it. We'll be doing some more of this stuff. We're talking wrestling. We'll try to do this once a week and keep folks up to date. And I guess that'll sign us off. So, for Street Knowledge, I am Chris Graham. Have a great day, night, whatever the case may be, everybody.